Together again.
That's Sunday, January 11th at 4 p.m. Shape Community Center. Shape Community Center. 3815 Live Oak, corner of West Alabama and Live Oak, in the heart of Third Ward.
It's about brighter days.
For more information, call 832-283-5585.
You're in tune to 90.1 KPFT.
Houston.
KPFT elections are underway. Candidates speak their piece every half hour.
My name is Bev Fitzgerald, and I am pleased to present my qualifications as a candidate for the local KPFT Board of Directors. I have lived in Houston for 32 years, have been a business owner for the past 12 and a half years, and a Rotarian for almost 12 years. I am currently the president of the Galleria Area Rotary Club. I responded to KPFT's request for board member candidates because I believe that free speech radio is essential to a free society. KPFT and Pacifica meet that need in the greater Houston area, and its future deserves to be protected by those in the diverse communities it serves. I am committed to ensuring fiscal responsibility, diverse programming, and long-range planning for the well-being of KPFT during my term on the board. I respectfully request your support and vote.
To find out more about KPFT elections, visit the KPFT website at kpft.org.
At 90.1 FM, this is KPFT in Houston. And now, Houston's only primetime radio program dedicated to news and concerns of the lesbi, gay, and transgender identity. This is Queer Voices.
Good evening. It's 46 degrees here in Houston, and this is Queer Voices. Tonight, we have a very packed show. David Elliott's going to be calling from Washington and probably talking about the presidential elections coming up with the caucuses and the primaries. Then Randall Ellis is going to be talking about the gay agenda for the lesbian gay rights lobby of Houston. Dick Dickerson will be here to talk about the Grand Marshal's nomination process. That's going to be happening real soon for the Pride celebration. And Joan has two authors coming up in the second hour. And they both sound really good. But first, we go to London to listen to the BBC World Service.
BBC News with Michael Poles. The United States has begun an international drive to reassure its most important customers that American beef is safe despite an outbreak of mad cow disease in Washington state. One delegation has left for Mexico to highlight the measures the U.S. authorities are imposing to deal with the disease. From Washington, here's Martin Turner.
American beef exports are worth more than $3 billion a year, and the U.S. authorities are hoping to persuade countries to restart trade as soon as possible. Last week, they announced a series of measures aimed at restoring confidence, including a ban on the use of crippled cattle, called downers, for human consumption. Now the authorities have said they'll slaughter 450-month-old calves because they can't determine which one was born to the original diseased animal. U.S. delegations have already visited Japan and South Korea, which together with Mexico are normally the biggest buyers of U.S. beef.
The United States says its sanctions on Libya will remain in place despite British moves to help reintegrate the country into the mainstream of international affairs. In a statement, the Bush administration praised Tripoli's decision last month to renounce weapons of mass destruction and allow inspections of its nuclear facilities. But the statement said Libyan words must be followed by tangible action. From Washington again, here's Michael Buchanan this time.
This was a wholly expected decision by President Bush. U.S. sanctions against Libya have been in place since 1986, when Washington accused Tripoli of being responsible for a series of bomb attacks on Americans in Europe. They include a ban on direct trade, travel restrictions, and financial penalties. Libya had hoped that following its decision last month to open its weapons of mass destruction programs up to international inspections, the U.S. would move to lift the sanctions. But while President Bush says that agreement marks the beginning of a process of rejoining the international community, it's not enough.
Portugal has rejected calls from the United States to post armed guards, called Sky Marshals, on airliners flying between the two countries. The security chief of the Portuguese Civil Aviation Authority said that putting loaded guns aboard an aircraft could endanger it. He would prefer to cancel any flight against which there was a credible terrorist threat. Earlier, security staff at U.S. air and sea ports began photographing visitors from many countries and taking their fingerprints as part of new security measures. The data will be checked against records of suspected terrorists. You're listening to the news from the BBC in London. The United States Army is offering bonuses to soldiers serving in Iraq, Kuwait and Afghanistan to persuade them to stay in the service. Soldiers whose terms of enlistment have expired are being offered up to $10,000 to sign on for another 3 years. And those who intend to leave in the next few months have had their departure delayed. An Army spokesman said the moves were necessary to maintain the cohesion and combat effectiveness of units serving in Iraq, Kuwait and Afghanistan. The BBC Pentagon correspondent says there are more signs of the strain the US Army is under. Anti-terrorism officials from across the European Union say they're setting up a joint force to investigate a recent series of letter bomb attacks. At least seven booby-trapped devices, all posted from Italy, have been sent to European Union officials and institutions over the past 2 weeks. In the latest attacks, letter bombs have exploded in the offices of two leading members of the European Parliament. No one was injured. The packages were posted in the northern Italian city of Bologna, and Italian police suspect anarchists are to blame, as our Rome correspondent David Willey reports.
The Bologna connection is significant because it's the hometown of the European Commission President Romano Prodi, who himself received one of the booby-trapped parcels during the Christmas holidays. The Italian authorities have said only that one of several shadowy anarchist groups known to the police here is believed to have been responsible. All postal packets addressed to EU institutions or personnel from post offices in the Bologna area have been banned for the past week. Italian political observers have been connecting the letter bombs to the forthcoming European elections.
The last active rebel group in Burundi says it's willing to hold talks with the president, Domitien Ndayizeze. The group, which calls itself the Forces for National Liberation, or FNL, had previously refused to negotiate with Mr. Ndayizeze, who's a Hutu. Now, however, the FNL says the president has promised to listen to their concerns. An FNL spokesman said the real power in Burundi lay with the minority Tutsis, who dominate positions in the army. Smoking holes have been found in the ground in eastern Spain the day after balls of fire were seen streaking through the sky. Spanish television showed pictures of charred vegetation and six holes about 30 centimetres in diameter, one of them still smouldering. BBC News.
This is Queer Voices.
Good evening, this is Jack Walensky.
And I'm Joan Devlin.
And J.D. Doyle.
And Glenn Holt.
Tonight we have a pretty packed show, which is like how we like to make it. Coming up after News Wrap, we're going to be talking to David Elliott, who reports on national issues for us. David Elliott used to be the communications director for the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, and of course, talking about the national elections, which ought to be really exciting. Randall Ellis, will be talking to him right after that. He's talking about what the Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby of Texas is going to be up to this year. Then we'll be talking to Dick Dickerson. He is on the Pride Committee, and he's working on the Graham Marshall nomination project and how that's taken care of. And Joan, you got a couple authors?
Yes, Frank Delastrito is returning. He's going to be talking to us about his newest book, which is Legends and Folklore, which is a story of the 1940s movie monsters, their otherness, and how they kind of changed the tenor of a nation in some ways. And the second interview will be with Matt Bernstein Sycamore, who is the author of Pulling Taffy. It is a story of his life as a male escort.
Escort,
exactly.
Okay. That actually sounds very good. Want to give you a program note to follow what's going on our show. You can go to our website, queervoices.org. And in the next 2 weeks, we'll only be an hour long instead of 2 hours long because of the election process going on here for the new lab, the local advisory board. And that's a pretty important process that's going on here because it's going to be the first openly elected board by a media organization of any kind. And hopefully that will all work out and we'll all be here after that. And then the week after that, of course, is Queer Music Heritage Week, and then we go into Marathon. So we got a lot going on here in the next month or so here on Queer Voices and at KPFT. But let's first listen to News Wrap.
I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
With News Wrap, a summary of some of the news in or affecting the lesbian and gay community for the 2 weeks ending January 3rd, 2004. Argentina's parliament, the Chamber of Deputies, has voted to amend the national anti-discrimination law to make sexual orientation and gender identity or its expression protected categories. The law defines as discriminatory acts and omissions motivated by these and 18 other reasons. The national gay and lesbian civil rights group called CHA, Comunidad Homosexual Argentina, led almost two decades of lobbying to win the early December vote, which it called an historic step in the recognition of the rights of gay, lesbian, transgender, transsexual, bisexual people in the entire nation.
Sexual orientation-based discrimination is now prohibited in employment by the executive branch of the U.S. state of Michigan under an executive order Democratic Governor Jennifer Granholm issued on Christmas Eve. About 55,000 state civil service jobs are covered by the order. The national group Human Rights Campaign says that only 10 other U.S. states have adopted similar employment policies.
In South Korea, the Seoul High Court has issued a ruling against the nation's first gay website, X-Zone, yet the decision itself is supportive of gays and lesbians' constitutional rights to free expression and the pursuit of happiness. The government's Information and Communications Ethics Committee, which censors the internet in South Korea, had designated X-Zone as harmful to minors, and X-Zone was asking the court to override the ruling. The judge apparently did not really have that choice, since there was no higher court precedent on enforcing the anti-gay clause of the so-called youth protection law governing internet censorship. But while finding against X-Zone, the judge suggested that the law may violate the constitutional rights of gays and lesbians and expressed doubts as to its listing of homosexuality among acts of perversion. The government's own sex education guidelines for teachers already recognize homosexuality as a human lifestyle and a form of affection.
Indonesia's first film clearly showing a gay kiss has not only escaped government censorship, it's become a box office hit. And it may even be opening some viewers' minds in the Muslim-dominated nation. The film is called Arisan, meaning a popular Indonesian tradition of friends and family meeting on a regular basis to gamble and socialize. And it satirizes Jakarta's super-rich elite. The three lead characters are two married women struggling with infidelity and their gay friend, Sakti, who is struggling with his orientation. As well as his passionate smooch with a new partner, the film includes an aerial shot of gay oral sex in a public bathroom.
Australia's first registered partnerships were contracted on the first business day of 2004 in Tasmania. Tasmanian partnerships are open not only to same-gender couples, but to a broad range of state residents in relationships the new law calls significant and caring. Registry carries essentially all the state-level legal rights and responsibilities of marriage, as the term partner has now replaced husband, wife, and de facto in numerous Tasmanian laws. The biggest exception is the ability to adopt an unrelated child as a couple, although partners can co-adopt each other's children. The first to register were Michael Carnes and Bob Lavis of Bruny Island, who've been together for 17 years. The first lesbians were Lee Highland and Beck Whelans of Launceston, a couple of 5 years standing who plan to have children by artificial insemination. Hobart couple of 2 years, Jason Kemp and Mark White, along with Highland and Whelans and veteran activist Rodney Croom, together ceremonially cut a cake decorated with a rainbow and the word equal.
Church weddings for gays and lesbians will be held by the three largest Protestant denominations in the Netherlands, which was the first nation in the world to open legal marriage to same-gender couples. The synods of the Dutch Reformed Church, the Calvinist Reformist Church, and the Lutheran Church have voted to merge those denominations into the Protestant Church of the Netherlands, effective in May. The united body will permit same-gender weddings, although no individual church will be required to perform them. Roman Catholics outnumber Protestants by about 2-1 in the Netherlands.
Pope John Paul II continued the Vatican's global campaign against legal recognition of same-gender couples on the first Sunday of 2004, attributing that growing movement to what he called a misunderstood sense of rights. He reaffirmed that heterosexual marriage is sacred, calling it a human and divine gift, and said it is necessary that at every level the efforts of those who believe in the importance of the family based on matrimony unite.
But more than a score of Roman Catholic priests in the Chicago area took issue with their church's homophobia in a joint open letter to the hierarchy of the Roman Catholic Church. They declared themselves increasingly disturbed with the increase in the use of violent and abusive language in church documents relating to homosexuality, language they labeled not only pastorally destructive, but vile and toxic. They called for not only an immediate end to such language, but asked that all those in official positions of teaching authority in the church refrain from any more statements directed at the gay and lesbian members of the body of Christ, and instead begin an earnest dialogue with those same members. Pledging themselves to extend respect and dignity to all, they wrote, "We join the countless men and women, heterosexual and homosexual, who seek justice, mercy, and compassion in and through the Catholic Church."
China's first trans man this week became the nation's first transsexual to legally marry there. According to government sources, the trans man known as Ah Gang married a woman known as Xiao Li in the city of Chengdu. The couple had been living together for 3 years, but they could not officially marry until after Ah Gang underwent sex reassignment surgery in May and received a revised identity card. Ah Gang told the Chengdu Commercial Daily, "All these years I've yearned for love, but never imagined I would taste it. And when I finally met Xiao Li, I didn't dare to think about marriage. I'm lost for words now that I've finally fulfilled both my wishes."
And finally, the changing of the year is the season of awards, and And among the honorees, South African veteran gay activist Zaki Ahmad and a group he chairs, Treatment Action Campaign, were both formally nominated for the 2004 Nobel Peace Prize by the U.S.-based American Friends Service Committee for what it called a significant contribution to the global struggle against AIDS.
Nigeria's first lesbian, gay, and trans group, Alliance Rights Nigeria, was honored by the National Group Journalists Against AIDS with a Breaker of Silence Award at its late December Red Ribbon Awards ceremony.
The Paris-based World Association of Newspapers awarded its annual Golden Pen of Freedom to openly gay Uzbek journalist Ruslan Sharipov, who remains imprisoned on a sodomy conviction widely believed to have been designed to silence his criticism of the government. Calling for his release, the group said, "The award recognizes Mr. Sharipov's outstanding defense and promotion of press freedom in the face of constant physical danger, prison, and censorship. His refusal to censor himself, even in the face of intimidation, prison, and torture, is a courageous act that is an inspiration to journalists and human rights everywhere."
The U.S. Religion News Writers Association named as its Religion Newsmaker of the Year Gene Robinson, the first openly partnered gay to be consecrated as a bishop by the Episcopal Church USA and a source of controversy throughout the global Anglican Communion.
Time Magazine's 2003 Canadian Newsmaker of the Year was actually a gay male couple, Michael Leshner and Michael Stark of Toronto, who capped their years of activism for equal marriage rights by becoming the first same-gender couple in the nation to receive a legal marriage license following an historic ruling by the Ontario Court of Appeal.
There were three entries of interest on Queen Elizabeth's New Year's honors list for the UK. Openly gay police inspector Paul Cahill, chair of the UK-wide Gay Police Association, becomes a member of the British Empire for services to diversity within the police and to the wider gay community in London. Bisexual film and stage director Stephen Daldry, whose work includes Billy Elliot and The Hours, already had his MBE, but is now elevated to Commander of the British Empire. One of Scotland's newest MBEs is Anna Patrizio, the mother of a gay son who was honored for her work with Parents Enquiry Scotland, a helpline for parents of lesbian gay children.
Also on the New Year's honors list, the newest members of the New Zealand Order of Merit are openly lesbian entertainers, the Top Twins, Linda and Jules. Along with becoming successful on television and about 25 years of activism for gay and lesbian equality, they've also worked against apartheid and nuclear weapons and for Maori land rights.
And with Italy's New Year's honors list, President Carlo Azeglio Ciampi conferred one of the nation's highest honors on a hero who had been considered one of its lowest citizens. The Medaglia d'Oro al Merito Civile goes to a homeless gay cross-dresser who turned 57 on Christmas Eve, a birth date that gave him the first name Natale, an Italian equivalent of Noel. In mid-December, Natale Maria intervened to stop two young men who were attacking and robbing a group of young women. Others heard their screams and saw what was happening, but took no action. Maria remains in a coma from the beating the men gave him, but his sacrifice gave the women the chance to escape. They notified police, leading to the arrest of the men, who will be charged with attempted murder for their attack on Maria. There's hope that Maria will regain consciousness, and when he does, he'll no longer have to sleep in the streets of Rome. Mayor Walter Veltroni left by his hospital bed the keys to a city-owned flat.
That's News Wrap for the 2 weeks ending January 3rd, 2004, written by Cindy Friedman and recorded at the studios of KPFK Los Angeles.
Follow the news in your area. An informed community is a strong community. For This Way Out, I'm Cindy Friedman.
And I'm John Beaupre.
This is Queer Voices.
Well, it's a nice evening here. It's winter back here in Texas. And on the line with us from Washington is David Elliott. How are you doing this evening, David?
A couple technical glitches. We'll be on with him in a second.
David is going to be talking about, I'm sure, the presidential election. David?
Hi, I'm here. Can you hear me?
Absolutely.
Great. Well, Happy New Year to you, Jack.
Happy New Year to you, too.
You know, 2004, a year that is divisible by the number four, and you know what that means?
It's a leap year.
Well, that's true, but it's a presidential election year. And, you know, for those of us who follow politics, for those of us who feast on politics...
Us junkies.
Yes, us junkies, us pundits. This is the Super Bowl, the World Series. This is March Madness, all rolled into one.
Well, you know, it's been pretty exciting here in Houston. We got a new mayor, we got a new city controller, and East Parker is now controller.
Oh, wonderful.
And they had a picture in the Chronicle of Anise's inauguration, and it showed her and her partner, Kathy Hubbard. And it even mentioned the story that went to the New York Times, which talked about both our new rail system here and the election of the new officials of being inaugurated. It mentioned that Anise and Kathy, her partner. Things are moving forward.
That's wonderful. Wonderful. Well, Jack, I was wondering if you didn't mind if I might be able to sort of walk your listeners through what we might expect over the course of the next month in terms of the presidential race.
I think that would be good because I think it's going to be real quick, isn't it?
It's going to be really quick, and the action actually kicks off. A lot of people don't know this. The action kicks off 8 days from now. 8 days from now, Washington, D.C. will hold the nation's first presidential preference primary.
Really?
Now, this isn't actually as big a deal as I'm making it out to sound. D.C. moved its primary up to the beginning of the calendar year in order to publicize the fact that we do not have voting representation in Congress. In fact, those listeners out there who have visited Washington, D.C. within the past couple of years probably have noticed our spiffy new license plates, which read, "Taxation without representation."
Yes. Yes.
Still, our primary next Tuesday, 8 days from now, won't mean very much for two reasons. First, because it's a preference primary. Actual delegates will not be awarded, so it's really no more than a beauty contest. Second, most of the leading presidential candidates are boycotting the primary because they do not want to offend the sensibilities of New Hampshire or Iowa, the states that traditionally go first in picking a presidential nominee. But still, it's an election, and I get to vote, so I'm going to tell you about it.
Okay.
There are four legitimate candidates on the ballot: Howard Dean, Dennis Kucinich, Carol Moseley Braun, and Reverend Al Sharpton. I expect Dean to get about two-thirds of the vote, probably somewhere around 60 to 70%. Sharpton and Kucinich will compete for second place, with each candidate getting around 10 to 15% of the vote. And then Moseley Braun, who, a very, very, very intelligent woman, by the way. I met her about 2 months ago, but she has not been able to engage in any grassroots organizing. Hasn't been able to print up any signs or bumper stickers or organize her folks. She's going to bring up the rear, probably getting about 5% of the vote. But, you know, the D.C. primary is really the preseason of presidential politics. The real action begins exactly 2 weeks from tonight, 2 weeks from right now, when about 100,000 Democrats in Iowa, maybe more, will venture out in the bitter cold of winter to participate in evening caucuses that will last, on average, 2 to 3 hours each. Now, Jack, do you have a prediction about what's going to happen in Iowa?
Well, no, I don't. That's what I was hoping you would do.
Well, you know, these caucuses are complicated affairs, and I'm not going to walk the listeners through the arcane rules, but I'll tell you what I think is going to happen. Howard Dean is probably, and I mean probably, going to emerge the winner, but Dick Gephardt is going to make it very close and could actually pull off an upset. His grassroots operatives on the ground in Iowa understand the caucus rules better than do Dean's operatives, and an upset here is a real possibility.
Hmm.
John Kerry is going to show some real strength in Iowa, but will do no better than third place. I don't expect any other candidate to walk away from Iowa with delegates, although it is possible that John Edwards could register a slightly respectable fourth place finish. You know we're political pundits when we're using phrases like a slightly respectable fourth place finish.
Yes.
Now, that happens 2 weeks from now, the evening of Monday, January 19th. 8 days later, on January 27th, we have the New Hampshire primary. And I am telling you that it is at this point a certainty that Dean will finish first and John Kerry second in New Hampshire. Third place is up for grabs. I almost said third grade there. That kind of shows you where my mentality is. Third place is up for grabs, but I'm betting on retired General Wesley Clark finishing third. And at this point, the campaigns of John Edwards and Joe Lieberman, remember him?
Oh, yes.
They're going to be on very, very shaky ground indeed. And then from there, the race moves on to February 3rd. And on that day, voters in seven states, Arizona, Delaware, Missouri, New Mexico, North Dakota, Oklahoma, South Carolina, will either vote in primaries or attend caucuses to register their choice for president. Then February 7th, Michigan and Washington. Then one day later, Maine. And at this point, it's going to be a two or three candidate race. My guess is the survivors are going to be Howard Dean, Wesley Clark, and perhaps Dick Gephardt. Clark's final opportunity to make this a two-person race will come on February 10th, when the states of Tennessee and Virginia host primary elections. Now, Jack, I'd like to say one thing, two things really, in conclusion, if I may. First, my guess, and this is only a guess, because, come on, not a single vote has been cast yet, but I'm guessing that we are going to see a very unusual dynamic, a very unusual outcome this election season. I actually think that Howard Dean is going to win 49 of the 50 states on his way to the Democratic nomination. The one exception, I think, is Missouri, which might go for home candidate Dick Gephardt. The second point I want to make in conclusion, I want to talk here about the involvement of the lesbian, gay, mm-hmm. bisexual, mm-hmm. and transgender community in this election. The last point I want to make is this. If Dean goes on to become the nominee, it will largely be due to the early involvement of the lesbian and gay and bisexual and transgender community in his campaign.
And give us a little bit of a background about that, because I saw an article in a paper, and that sounds really interesting.
Sure. Howard Dean started taking off in the year 2002. It's hard to believe. It's 2 years ago now. He started having house parties around the country. He had about 150 house parties throughout the United States. And get this. Of the 150 or so house parties he had, all but one were hosted by lesbian and gay activists. During the first 3 months of this past year, 2003, when Dean's campaign really began to take off, more than half of his campaign fundraising events were hosted by gays and lesbians. Why is that important, Jack? It's important because now fully 10% of all of the money going to the Democratic Party, Democratic candidates on a national level, is coming from gay and lesbian folks. Fully 10%. Now, please allow me to be very clear here. I don't want anybody to miss this point. As the Washington Post reported just the other day, the very foundation of Dean's early campaign, both in fundraising and in grassroots organization, was built by the support of the lesbian and gay community. Now, you know, one day that might be an historical footnote, but today it is a rather dramatic and groundbreaking development, because this may and probably will go down as the first time in history that the LGBT community did not just influence, but rather helped determine the nominee of a major political party. Whatever happens this crazy election year, that is something for us all to reflect on.
Well, why do you think these parties all happened for Dean in the early stages? Was there...
It was civil unions in Vermont. You know, the Vermont Supreme Court ruled the way it did. The Vermont legislature battled over the issue. Governor Dean got, you know, a bill authorizing civil unions, signed the bill. Then right after that, this would have been the year 2000, he encountered a just vicious reelection campaign. There were times when he had to wear a flak jacket, the thing that prevents you from being shot. When he was on the campaign trail.
A bulletproof vest.
Thank you, Joan, thank you. you never think of Vermont elections getting really, really hot. This one got really, really hot. And he withstood that. And he ran a good campaign and won re-election, if memory serves, by 4 to 6 percentage points. And, you know, this was before, I mean... You know, keep in mind how far we've come so quickly, you know.
Yes.
Sodomy had not been struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court. The Massachusetts Supreme Court had not ruled that same-sex marriage must be allowed under the Massachusetts Constitution. Vermont went first. Vermont went first, and Dean signed that bill. And so a lot of the gay and lesbian activists who are involved in Democratic Party circles, both those with money and who could donate a lot of money or, you know, talk to those who could, and also people who didn't have money but were the activists in our community, they turned out early for his campaign, and it gave him an early boost. What it really, really did was it prevented John Kerry from becoming the early progressive front runner.
Well, that's pretty incredible. And, you know, we're just starting out on this, and I think maybe some people think it's all over, you know, for the Democratic nomination, but there's still, you know, it's just starting, really.
It is just starting. All of the, you know, the stars are aligned, if you will. If Governor Dean did not make any, you know, verbal gaffes, or, you know, if scandals did not emerge or anything like that, then, in all honesty, and, you know, I understand that I'm a political pundit in saying this, and as we keep stressing, not a single vote has been cast. But if there are no controversies, scandals, huge verbal gaffes, then...
We just lost him.
Well, yes. David Elliott is the National Coalition... to abolish the death penalty. He is a communications director, and formerly he was communications director for National Gay and Lesbian Task Force. David can be reached through the NCADP.org website. David joins us every first Monday here, and possibly by next February, or February, the first Monday in February, we may know who the nominee may be for the Democratic, but it's not over yet until it's over. So David will be back next in the first week in February. You're listening to Queer Voices.
KPFT elections are underway. Candidates speak their piece every half hour.
The public need for independent broadcasting has never been more urgent than in this Orwellian age of perpetual, unprovoked war. Hi, I'm Ken Freeland. Many of you know me from my organizational work in Houston's peace movement. When the Pacifica Foundation was hijacked, I helped lead the struggle to bring democracy to Pacifica and fully restore its vital peace mission. Now I'm asking you for your vote of support so that I can continue this effort as one of your local station board representatives. I've signed the KPFT Peace Priorities Pledge. Among other important concerns, it addresses our need to broadcast Democracy Now! Earlier during morning drive time when more of us can listen to it on our way to work, and repeat it later for the benefit of listeners who work evening shifts. To learn more about this pledge, go to KPFT's website and follow the link in my candidate statement. Pacifica means peace. Please remember me, Ken Freeland, when you vote. Thank you.
To find out more about KPFT elections, visit the KPFT website at kpft.org.
Perfect song for this week. That was New Year's Resolutions by the Therapy Sisters from their CD, Have a Codependent Christmas.
Well, it is the new year, and this is the year when the legislature is not in session, although there may be a special session. Randall Ellis is with us. He is the executive director for the Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby of Texas. So, you've got nothing to do this year without them being in session, huh?
Well, we've got lots to do. Just give us some breathing time. They work us hard those past, well, the 5 months in a regular session, and then we had three special sessions on top of that. I was beginning to think that it was nothing but sessions here.
Yeah, that'll teach you, right?
Exactly. But we have lots of things going on. In fact, I'm very excited about it because the next session I'll have a whole year to prepare for that.
Isn't there a chance or maybe a special session this year?
There is. There's a chance that we will do another special session on school finance. That was one of those priorities that everyone knew we needed to do something about this going into the last session, 2003, but that seemed to get pushed to the side as redistricting seemed to be the one big thing that they wanted to fight over, or half of them wanted to fight over, a portion of them. But yeah, we may see a school finance this spring.
Well, and that certainly is an important issue because the No Child Left Behind thing forgot to fund it.
Exactly. And it will be something that we're monitoring because, of course, you know, with youth protection for youth in the schools,
yes,
it provides an opportunity for us to educate the public and the legislators on this issue again.
So what are the things that you're going to be working on, you and LGRL in particular?
We've got a few great projects that are coming up and going to be launched in the Houston area that I'm very excited about. The one that I wanted to mention tonight, without a doubt, was a media training that we're going to be doing for LGBT couples in Houston. We're going to be partnering with the Stonewall Lawyers Association, with GLAAD are coming in, and LGRL, and we're going to train folks, LGBT couples, on how to talk to the press about same-sex marriage. So that's going to be taking place on Saturday, February 8th, and anyone that wants to sign up for that or is interested in that can either give me a call here at the lobby in Austin at 512-474-5475, or you can also call Jerry Simoneau in Houston. And his phone number is 713-227-1717. In conjunction with that, we're going to be doing the same sort of thing that they did last year around Valentine's Day, applying for marriage license and talking to the media about why same-sex couples aren't able to get married in the state of Texas.
Right, and that's really important about how the media gets the message of why this is important.
Exactly. You know, one of the greatest moments that I've had at this job was when the Massachusetts Supreme Court gave its ruling. I was actually I was on a flight while that happened, headed to Atlanta to meet with other state organizations like LGRL from all over the South to talk on that very issue of marriage. And part of our training that day was going through and working with GLAAD on media training. And we were sitting there and we were able to use the exact talking points and the articles that our organizations and national partners have been using. And it was just so good to see how it came together and formed a great message. And people have, I think, begun to understand the issue a lot more than they did 6 months ago.
Right. And not just on the media, but if people would write letters to their elected officials, and even though it may not be maybe a foregone conclusion about our two U.S. representatives and many of our congressional representatives, it's still good to write letters to them to remind them that, you know, we're around and, you know, we certainly have opinions and votes.
Exactly. I mean, they have to keep on hearing it. I mean, part of the lobbying process is making them understand. And just because they've announced that they stand somewhere today, that doesn't mean that we can't move them. So no one, and one of the most frustrating things, I think, for me is people say, oh, Texas is a lost cause. It's not a lost cause. We have to continue to work hard and continue to drill our elected officials on the importance of protecting our families.
Well, exactly. I mean, you know, this may not be the exact same thing, but the fact that the sodomy law challenge came from Harris County in Pasadena, of all places,
and
it moved up to the Supreme Court, and it's by people being diligent and following through on it and working many, many years.
Exactly. I mean, that was our movement at its best. It started off there with, you know, the two individuals, and then Mitchell Kateen, and then just, you know, was handed off and organized and done the proper way. So I love to think about that and tell, you know, people that Pasadena, Texas is, you know, the birth ground of gay rights in the United States. So another great project that I wanted to mention that there's so many that we have going on. Another one that I've talked to you about in other moments is our voter identification project, where we're calling it Equality Knox, where we're looking to identify LGBT-friendly voters and educate those who are not as friendly as we'd like them to be on LGBT issues, everything from the same-sex marriage to workplace discrimination to protection for our youth in school. And we'll be working in several districts in the Montrose area, block walking and sending people out to the polls when there's our elections to find supporters and identify them so that we can educate them about upcoming issues, whether it be at an election time or something that's going on at the state level the next time they're in session for 2005 at the Texas legislature.
And that's very important. And there is, in fact, one district council race here that was won by, I think it was 21 votes this time. And, you know, just getting a few people out to some of these elections could change the results.
Exactly. That we, you know, we're right there. This past year has been so amazing, being able to work in at what I'm doing right now, that I really have seen how the power of, you know, whether it be 20 people, 21 people showing up at the polls and voting for the candidate of their choice, or someone making a visit to a lawmaker or making a telephone call, it really has an effect, and that's how we need to play the game, and that's how we need to get involved.
And this year we have elections for judges, and, you know, we don't have very, and in fact, you know, I don't know if we have any Democratic judges left in the county, and it wasn't too long ago when there were very few Republican judges.
Yeah, and, you know, that's one of those areas where I think we need to do a better job in terms of educating the public the importance of having judges out there that are friendly to our issues. I think often people start at the top of the ballot and don't look all the way down, or don't give any thought to, as much thought, that's wrong to say, as they should to who they're voting for. I mean, when you look at election returns, people even stop voting once you work your way down the ballot. So, but having friendly family law judges in that deal with family law is important for second parent adoptions and foster care cases. There's so many areas where the judicial system has an effect on our lives. So,
well, yes, and the Houston Gay and Lesbian Political Caucus does do endorsing all the way down the ballot.
Exactly.
And that's real important. In fact, there's a meeting this Wednesday at 7 p.m. at the Community Center, which is at 3600 Montrose, Suite 207. And they're having elections to elect officers and board members. So if you want to get involved on that project locally, you can do that, or you can certainly volunteer. Is it possible to volunteer for LGRL from Houston?
Yes, it is. We need volunteers in the Houston area, and in the coming 6 months, I'll be spending a lot of time in Houston working to recruit people to help us with our various projects. And anyone who's interested in volunteering for us in Houston can either give me a call here at the lobby. It's 512-474-5475, and I will talk to them about what they can do, whether it's, you know, helping us with block walking or handing out flyers or tabling at an event and talking about the work that LGRL does. We can find work for people to do. Or they can also email me. I forgot to mention that. It's Randall, R-A-N-D-A-L-L, at lgrl.org.
And also, government still goes on. Even though the legislature isn't in session, there's still committee meeting hearings, and there's, you know, the whole bureaucracy still moves.
Yeah, I mean, it's all there, and we're constantly up there at the Capitol talking to elected officials, monitoring what's going on. There's agency stuff. There's a lot of stuff that gets done through the agencies and monitoring what's going on, especially over at the health department with the consolidation of the Health and Human Service agencies. That's something that we're watching and keeping our fingers in the pot there. So there's always something going on, but it doesn't, you know, just it is a little bit easier for us now than when they are in session. We only work 12-hour days versus 16-hour days.
Well, yes, then the whole redistricting of the congressional districts is something that's in the courts now.
Yeah, we're waiting for that right now. In fact, you know, we thought 2 weeks ago that we would have an answer from the three-judge panel. There were some things that are going on. For example, preclearance was given by the Department of Justice. There was some talk about if preclearance was actually going to be given by some lower down people, and it got rejected, and actually was pre-cleared the maps that the legislature passed in the last special session. We've also been waiting for the judges to actually make the announcement. We were promised that almost 2 weeks ago, and so there's been a lot of interpretation of what this lag time means. If it's good or if it's bad, we shall see.
Right, so right now they're sort of on a holding pattern?
Yeah, I mean, I was just actually talking to a candidate from the Dallas area. A congressional candidate had given me a call to talk about some of the issues for our community, and people have gone ahead and filed. It's just that we're not sure what districts people will be running in. So there's some people that have filed for both a congressional and, for example, a House seat at the Texas legislature, and depending how that turns out, will enter one race and drop out of the other race.
Wow. It's going to be crazy, isn't it?
It is. But we should know by Monday is what the latest news today is that we should find out. We shall see. But the speculation is that the judges may be redrawing parts of the map, not the entire map.
Wow.
And that gets to be very, very difficult. It's probably almost impossible. So we may see, and what I suspect may happen, my bet would be that they probably won't run on the new districts for this coming year. That it may be in another year that they've got it all worked out, and so in 2 years we could have new congressional districts that folks are running on, but we shall see.
Wow. So you're certainly keeping busy.
Very busy, very busy. Another great thing I just want to mention is something new from LGR. It's called Texas Workforce, and it's really raising the visibility and the need for workplace discrimination for LGBT people, protection from discrimination here in Texas. We lag behind the rest of the country. We need that kind of policy in place, and last session should have been a session where we really talked about we have moved past hate crimes and we needed to talk to that, but the legislature wasn't budging on that. So
right, so presently there's absolutely no protection.
There's no protection. We get phone calls here all the time from people that say, I've been fired from my job because I'm gay. What lawyer, you know, how do I pursue a lawsuit? Where do I sign up? And we're like, sorry. It's perfectly legal here in the state of Texas. There are a few cities, Dallas, Fort Worth, Austin, that you're protected in. Public employees in Houston for city employees have some protection. But most cases of people that are calling, we say, you know, that's a difficult thing. We try to sign them up to go lobby their legislator, but when they're in that kind of position, it's a hard message to send to them.
Okay. So there's definitely a lot of stuff to do for GLPT people to get involved this year beyond what we were talking about earlier, the national elections. There's so much at stake in the local elections and statewide elections.
Exactly. I mean, we need to make sure that, you know, and we support in Houston, support those candidates who supported us. Houston was a great place. You know, that's where I came from, and we have lots of LGBT supportive legislators there, and we need to support them in the next year, whether it's getting out there and block walking with them, making sure you vote for them, or donating money to their campaign.
Great. Well, Randall, thank you very much for updating us on our first show this year, and we all have got a lot of work to do this year in making things better for our community. Randall Ellis is executive director of the Lesbian Gay Rights Lobby based in Austin, but certainly has a big presence here in Houston. If you'd like some more information, you can go to their website, lgrl.org, or go to our website, queervoices.org, and it's a listing for LGRL there. You're listening to Queer Voices.
Thank you, Jack.
I wish you were mine. That handsome spoken guy, a kind of sweet, kind of shy, makes me wonder if I should even give him a try.
KPFT elections are underway. Candidates speak their piece every half hour.
Hello, I'm Earl Gerhard, candidate for the KPFT Local Station Board. KPFT has been a tremendous resource to this community for over 30 years, and it is my privilege as a listener and supporter to do all I can to ensure that this treasure of progressive and marginalized voices continues to flourish. I believe the mission statement of Pacifica has stood as a framework for all who believe that we can live together in this diverse world. I believe we must become the change we wish to see within Pacifica and within the KPFT community. Dwayne Bradley, staff. Advisory Board have done a fine job recovering this station. I have a solid understanding of the obstacles this local station board will face. Through my professional, personal, and community experiences, I have developed a variety of skills I believe will be vital for constructive and effective leadership. I pledge to be an accessible and hardworking elected representative on your local station board who will hold the idea of a greater Pacifica as my guiding principle. Vote for me, Earl Gerhard. Thank you.
To find out more about KPFT elections, visit the KPFT website at kpft.org.
This is Queer Voices.
I guess you'll have to reread the article. Yeah.
We are going to go to the This Way Out segment.
Wellington, New Zealand pulled out every possible stop for the mid-December premiere of the final installment of director Peter Jackson's Lord of the Rings trilogy, Return of the King, and it was a celebration as much of the land where it was filmed as for the movies themselves. In the scant 3 weeks since a grand parade brought 100,000 fans to the streets of Wellington, Return has opened in 39 countries and brought in more than $500 million. That brings the total of the Three Rings movies to a staggering $2 billion+. Starring in the role of the wizardly Gandalf is the incomparable Sir Ian McKellen, famed for his upfront gay politics as well as his classic Shakespearean performances. With his current successes as Gandalf and as Magneto in the X-Men series, McKellen has added action figure to community at Premier House during the Return of the King celebrations. Hugh Young of Access Radio's Gay BC was on hand to record McKellen's, as always, witty remarks, which followed an introduction by gay MP Tim Barnett. Barnett's greeting included an account of recent legislative victories for the movement in New Zealand.
I don't quite know what I can talk about. It's a very, very impressive list of achievements, and I wish I could claim the same for our Labour government in the United Kingdom, because although it looks good on paper, it is a little bit worrying. Since Tony Blair became Prime Minister, we have now established an equal age of consent, and gays do serve openly without any effect whatsoever on efficiency and everything else in the military. But both those changes in the law were pursued right up to the European Court of Human Rights by the government, who were insisting on the status quo. I think, with a pusillanimity that I suspect it was meant to shelter them from what their critics might say. On the right wing, they could say, well, it's not our fault. We have to do what Europe tells us to do. But there have been other...